This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Hello everyone, welcome to today's session of We're Curious. My name is Felix Ocheng. I'll be your host for today. And as usual, what we do on We're Curious is we meet and we discuss a few things that really make up markets, things that I've done on tech, and also a few things that have happened this week. Today, I'll be joined once again by our CEO, Eric Asuma, who's here to constantly give us insights on how we're having various developments, not only on the tech side, but also a little bit on the HISA app, the developments that we are expecting in the next few days. But also one person who I'm seeing is joined in, I'm seeing Davis has joined in online as well. And so that's one thing that we would really be looking into. As investors, we are constantly really looking up to just what's really happening from various investment spaces, various investment angles. Those are some of the things that we'll be looking up to. So, Eric, welcome to today's session. Feel free.
Thank you, Felix. It's a pleasure to be here today.
All right, Eric. Maybe let's start off with what's really been moving markets here and there. I'd really want us to just start looking at it from the local markets. We've seen a lot of banks release their results, the Q1 results. The performance that has stood out, I believe, for most of us would really be on Equity Bank. It looks like Equity Bank has stolen the show from KCB this quarter. And also a lot of guys might want to see what really happened with Family Bank, which released their results yesterday evening. Family Bank really gave guys an impressive performance. I know that's one thing that guys are really looking up to. Eric, I don't know if you'd agree, but what would be your thoughts on Family Bank? I think the CEO at Family Bank is really doing a lot in terms of, I think the corporate governance for the company is really going up notch. And we're seeing a lot of guys are starting to believe she's bringing up a model of Rebecca Miano, and also her name is also Rebecca. So guys are always constantly trying to consider just what level of engagement a guy's having. Eric, what are your thoughts?
Interesting. I think since she joined the bank as the CEO, she's made a number of improvements from both a corporate governance perspective and from a numbers perspective. Impressive Q1 numbers. So I think they had impressive Q1 results, whereby they had, I think, over a 70% increase in their profit for that particular period. I think the other thing that I saw that grew was the balance sheet from about 82 billion to 94 billion in a single quarter. But I think she's made significant improvements compared to, I think, the time the bank had a few challenges, and most of them were because of corporate governance issues, but she's improved that a lot. I think one of the things that I've always told you, Felix, is that when it comes to having women on board or in leadership, changes a lot of things. Things around ethics, things around even improvement in financials. So I think it's just a sign that she's making a lot of improvements in the bank, and it's a good sign for investors. I think the other thing that hopefully they get listed sometimes.
Exactly, Eric. That's what I wanted to say. You know, a lot of guys are really talking about the bank ripe for listing on the Nairobi Securities Exchange. A lot of people are constantly wondering, when are we going to have Family Bank listed? I know that's one thing that guys are really concerned about. And if you're an investor out there and you're listening, don't worry, you're not alone. We are all constantly wondering just when is Family Bank listing on the Nairobi Securities Exchange. I think Family Bank would really be, it would really be an interesting one, since we've had a lot of dryouts on the NSE regarding listings. I believe family bank listing would be something that would be very interesting, Eric. Would you agree?
Definitely. I think they have a bond that's listed on the MSCI.
Yeah, and the bond has been performing very well. I think at least, you know, a lot of guys were afraid when corporate bonds, when we started seeing companies like Imperial Bank, the bond for Imperial, the bond for Chase, they all became a little bit of a challenge. And that's why a lot of guys started having issues and queries even when it came to Family Bank listing their bond. But now you see it's been close to, I think, about 6 years now, and the bond has really been performing on the NSE. Mm-hmm. Something that's very interesting for guys to really. Davis, what would you want to say about Family Bank? I know you're listing. If you probably looked at the bank's results, what would you want to mention on that?
Sorry, I don't have much to mention. I haven't really been covering banks. I'm covering other things. Yeah, but just enjoying the conversation.
All right, awesome. Eric, maybe also to look on global stocks, on global markets this week on the commodities bit. And in case you're wondering, guys, usually on Monday, that's when we cover local stocks in depth. So today, most likely, definitely, we'll really be looking a little bit on global markets. But maybe before we get into that, let's still stay home a bit, Eric. Central Bank's Monetary Policy Committee actually retain the benchmark lending rate at 7%, the CBR rate at 7%. Well, Eric, I know you attended the meeting, the conference call with investors and also the media. Mm-hmm. What are some of the questions that were arising from CBK? And also to give guys a brief of the data, we're seeing, and there's just been a lot of data, I'm just seeing Central Bank has released this a few minutes ago. And if in case you're wondering, I think this document will be, this document is on CBK's Twitter handle, where they're saying background data for Monetary Policy Committee meeting. So this is technically the presentation. Dr. Njoroge was slightly optimistic of what we should expect as investors, and also generally as the public, the general economic mood. And he said that one of the reasons why they're actually maintaining the CBR at 7% is because they believe that things are actually bound to get better. This is the same statement. I think this is the eighth consecutive time that the CBK Monetary Policies Committee is meeting, and they're maintaining the CBR at 7%. Do you think that Central Bank of Kenya is always looking on what other global central bankers are likely to do before they make their move?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I think from CBK's report, that indicated that the expectation in terms of things around inflation, I think that's been constant, and the current inflation rate is within their target range, which is between 2.5% to 7.5%. And what Njoroge mentioned at the call is that private sector activity is beginning to pick up. At the moment, I think, and based on, say, banking data, banking sector data, which I think you mentioned that the strong liquidity and capital adequacy ratios, and part of that is the CBK's foreign currency reserves also remain adequate again to cover the economy in case of any other short-term shocks or in the foreign exchange market. The other thing that I thought was very, very important from the CBK announcement is that they'll be getting, they expect to receive a loan very soon from the World Bank. I think that was a credit line of $750 million US dollars. I think they expect that in 2 weeks' time. And Njoroge said that part of this will be used to support, for budgetary support. And given that we currently have a huge budget deficit as Kenya, and I think that ends in our current fiscal year ends in June, right?
Yeah.
So I think that was one of the reasons. But you also mentioned that the other thing that's very important, I think, to tell our listeners is that you also mentioned that Kenya is expecting, they also expect to receive some more funding from the African Development Bank. And that funding will be used to close, to assist the country in closing its current account deficit and also boost the forex reserve. So I think the central bank, it's always optimistic about the current economy going forward. But I think that's the main loan they retained, the CBR at 7%. Yes.
Very interesting, Eric. I know one of the things that I've personally really learned from Dr. Njoroge over time, over his period as CBK governor, is he's always very optimistic. So I know generally, it's not only, and also just to clarify this to everyone, it's not only the CBK governor who sits in and makes some of these policy meetings, but I've always really loved about how he's always... he's composed, and whenever you talk about the economy, he's so positive about it. When guys are mentioning about Kenya defaulting on bonds and payments and X and Y, you'd always see him come out on the strong side and say, no, I actually think we are going to come out of this, and this is actually going to be better, X and Y, and all that. So I believe that at least it's always good. At least we're looking at this from one angle. Mm-hmm. Guys have been really complaining a lot about inflation and various data here and there. Mm-hmm. One of the things that really stood out for me is that despite having global economic challenges, we saw in April, we actually saw a lot of diaspora remittances. I think this was the largest in the past 3 years, from 2019, 2020, and 2021. April had the highest number of diaspora remittances into the country. I think that is one thing that we're looking at, about 299 million US dollars for diaspora remittances. So you're seeing even as much as the entire global economic activity is down. Mm-hmm. I think that it's something that I know guys are really looking up to. And he also mentioned that there's the recent diaspora survey which they conducted. We should be expecting that out in the next probably 2 or 3 weeks. I know that's something that we'd really be looking into. Eric, you talked about the current account deficit. I'm seeing we are just slightly at about negative 5.2. So we'd really been looking up to that. I know one thing that maybe Davis would want to talk about, not just today, but maybe later on. We'd really be talking about this on Wednesday. We'd talk about the cement consumption, where we're seeing cement consumption has really gone up to about 716,740 metric tons. That is in March 2021. Looks like 2021, it's only in February where we had less than about 650,000 metric tons of cement traded, consumed into the country or taken into the country. Sector growth, I think, fairly still remains stable. So we'll still continue looking up this, and even if there's anything else to come by with the CBK, I know that's something that we'd really be looking into as a team, as we're curious. That's something that we are constantly going to be keeping our eye on. So guys, you don't really need to worry about that. We're always going to push that up, and something else will be able to come in through. Eric, you have something to say on that?
I think something that also stood out for me in the week is Aliko Dangote, a very known businessman from Nigeria, was in Tanzania this week.
Come on, man.
Yes.
I think just say Africa's richest man. Yeah, like Africa's okay, yes, like yes, we know he's from Nigeria,
yes.
But come on, we love the African city.
Yes, Africa's richest man was in Tanzania this week, and he met President Suluhu, and basically from what was shared in the media by Tanzania's Ministry of Communication, or the handlers of Suluhu, is that Dangote is very optimistic about Tanzania at the moment. He said that the country has changed dramatically from a policy standpoint. I think what he said is that he expects to put much more investments into the country with the leadership of Suluhu. Now, which begs the question, was it that Magufuli's policies were against foreign investors or what? But I think he mentioned that he'd been investing more into the country. I think he plans to open a new facility, that I think a new production facility, or some to invest in the fertilizer business, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think he'll be making more investments in the country. I think he already has operations around cement, which is quite significant in that particular country. So, and he said he'd also be rooting for Tanzania to bring in more foreign investors. So, I think something that we've always spoken about is at times it's good to have women leaders at the top, and they I think given that women are a bit compassionate, so I think we've seen what Suluhu has achieved within in very few weeks, right? Which is very, very significant. So what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, first of all, I think the main reason that we've really had a challenge with Dangote, what Magufuli really had a challenge with Dangote was earlier on, as early as 2016, there was an issue between Dangote Cement Factory, that is in Mtwara, in Tanzania. I think there was the issue about Dangote and also the challenge with them having, because they had a little bit of tax incentives. And so the tax incentives are what were really bringing in a high challenge to some extent. And so what I think that a lot of guys really need to understand is that probably they're mending fences, because earlier on, there's because it's been close to, I think, 4 or 5 years that Dangote Cement and Tanzanian authorities had issues, because the Nigerian company was actually claiming that the government was not really supportive of the word. Where now the government is coming for taxes that they were saying these were actually tax reliefs, some of the issues that they're having. So probably I think that's one thing that Dangote is going to look into. My main concern with Dangote coming into, it's really not a concern per se, but it's personally for those who've, for cement companies in East Africa. We've seen the various challenges that we've had with Dangote just in Ethiopia from the northern side of the country. What level are we going to expect for what we should have on the southern bit if Dangote, and you know, like Dangote has the capacity. His main game has actually been having a little bit of access on the low edge. That has usually been his main game. So what would really be the concern for investors who are still going to be here on the market? I believe that is one major concern that we definitely would be having.
Okay, I think across Africa, I think that was some of the major news. Any funding report this week? That's major.
Maybe just before we go into funding, Eric, one of the things that we'd really want to see is the few companies in the country that have made headlines this week. Let's finish up with what we have in on local markets, and then we can go up to what's happening in global markets. I don't know if there's anything that has caught your eyes on the local markets this week. I think something that you'd want us to probably talk about.
Apart from the earnings reports from banks, it's basically Safaricom's share price. It's been up. We talked about that recently. The other one was on CBK recently released report. I think that was on the banking sector annual bank. I think the annual banking sector report, right? And what stood out for me was that about 79% of banks had in 2020, about 79% of banks had some bit of innovation or a fintech product that came out from the banks. So I think that's something that stood out for me. Maybe other news that we can think that also stood out during the week in the business world was, I think, Safaricom CEO had a briefing whereby he said they had negotiated with the Ethiopian government so that it would be easier for them to repatriate cash from that particular country to outside Ethiopia. I think that was major news.
Do you really think that would be something that would really be positive about? Because, you know, Eric, looking at it from another angle, Ethiopia has been promising, but there's still a lot of challenges that I know Safaricom, and you see most of these are promises. The government of Ethiopia is really yet to formalize some of these. And there are a lot of challenges that I know Abi has been facing in the country. So I know that's going to be a challenge. But should we be positive about it? I'm just trying to look at angles at which we can possibly hold this for and just just probably have a little bit of a head start. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think some of these things we just need to have an overview about before we can be able to move in. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
So looking at it from the tech side, a few of the things that moved in on the stock beat this week, we're seeing Brazilian prop tech, that is Quinto Andar, got about 300 million for 4 billion valuation. That's fintech, a few startups that came in this week. In Africa, we're still seeing a little bit of a lot of activity still from, I think, Dapper Labs. I'm also just trying to see just a little bit on stuff. But then, Eric, what would be your take on fintech within Africa? Do you think that we still have a little, what general area do you think companies within Africa are really supposed to have an overview of? Because I'm thinking we should be here in agriculture. Mm-hmm. So if we're here in agriculture, then I'm constantly wondering, okay. Uh-huh. What is it that we are supposed to have? Which areas? Because I'm always thinking like agriculture is an area that we can, yeah, is always an area that we can be able to just move into as time goes by. But my concern is still just really about, are we really focusing too much on fintech? Do you think that Africa as a continent should start focusing on other areas like agritech?
I think it depends on. It depends on, I think most of our challenges are with regards to finances. As it, moving money is a big, it's a big element in this continent. So I think that's why fintech has taken, is taking a big chunk of, or a bigger pie in the tech ecosystem. But my thinking is that apart from fintech, I think there are other sectors that need to be explored. So we have, I think, the health sector, education sector is a big, big area that has not been explored very well. We have, I think, agriculture, as you mentioned. Other sectors that I think will be interesting will be around transport. We have a few startups doing interesting things around that area. But agriculture, health are quite massive, and even education.
All right. My main concern, I really think, for Africa should really be a little bit into, just as you've said, you've mentioned it, still really into the education side, mm-hmm. and also probably slightly into the agri-tech, because, you know, I saw a tweet by on Africa Day where I saw there's a young lady by the name Kasiva, mm-hmm. who said that it's very sad that Africa as a continent produces most of the global agricultural aspects or global agricultural products, and we still import the same products when they're refined. So I think that's one thing that as investors, generally as Africa, it's also up to us, and it's also up to the global community who are funding this tech, because we're looking at it from a fintech perspective, but you know, you can never bank people who don't have money.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can't really develop financial products for people if they don't have money. Mm-hmm. That is my major concern.
Interesting. I think another sector that's very interesting is on the logistics side of things. I think quite very, very few startups doing interesting things in the logistics and transport space. So things around storage, services around storage, warehousing, transport of trucks. So it's really unexplored, and I think with the implementation of the FTCA, right?
Yeah.
I think you might see a number of startups doing interesting products in that particular area.
Yeah, but then also something that moved in this week on fintech is on Disrupt Africa. We had 11 African startups actually selected to join the Knox and Impact Accelerator. This is in Sweden. Where we're seeing a lot. So these are not only funds that were selected from just one angle, but I'm seeing Rwanda is still coming up, because Pesa Choice in Rwanda is actually one of the companies that actually came up as the top 11 companies. And also we are seeing other companies like Quora, payment startups like Nash. So the main concern for me, I think, would still really be on, we're developing a lot of financial products for guys, for for a continent that really needs access to that finance. Mm-hmm. So if we could get various ways and various abilities for guys to be able to make that revenue before you can bank guys, before you can create any financial product for guys, they really need to have access to this money.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't tell me to say if I'm living hand to mouth, technically there's nothing I can be able to save on that bit. So that's one thing I'm really hoping that guys would really be looking into. So for investors out there, for innovators, over time, one thing that you need to really pick up is you can just probably start having various ways of innovating products that would lead either to guys learning on the product on various aspects of investing, but also talk about wealth creation or wealth generation, whichever way that you'd mention it. I still think it would still either be or almost be the same as guys really picking up, because I still insist you can't bank people if they don't have any money.
True.
Yeah.
I think investments is a big element. I think when you that's what you are trying to do with KISS, right?
Yeah.
And when you look at most of the fintech startups in the continent have been on the payment side. So send money, payments, customers to banks, but we have seen very few startups that are trying to develop products around, say, investing, wealth management. So I think it's an interesting space.
All right, Eric. Maybe we'll continue watching as well on the tech bit, and we can continue just having a little bit of an overview over time, so that we can have a final call on what we can say. Time over time, one and again, things that people would constantly be having their thoughts about. One thing that also really caught a lot of people's attention this week, Eric, which we can't really leave the curious without talking about, definitely, is cryptocurrencies.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin had, I think, over the past 2 weeks, Bitcoin has had one of the worst crashes over time. If you're looking at the 5-day general activity for Bitcoin, you'd see Bitcoin traded as low as I think about 35,000 or 34,
mm-hmm.
thereabout.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's one thing that a lot of guys have really been looking into. I know Kelly is in the chat today. I don't know if you'd want to mention something on Bitcoin, Kelly. All right, we're not able to get into him, but Eric, what do you think, what are your thoughts on Bitcoin? And just before Eric mentions, fun fact again, I like Uganda, I'm never hitting on Uganda, but here's the fact, one Bitcoin is an equivalent of 129,903,457 shillings and 467.60. That is in Uganda shillings.
Mm-hmm.
So in Uganda, you'd need 129 million to buy one Bitcoin. Oh my God.
Interesting. It's not been, the last 2 weeks haven't been good for crypto.
Yeah.
I think specifically Bitcoin. I think today we saw over the last 24 hours, I think we saw a plunge of nearly, there was a time it fell by nearly 8%, up to 10%. At the moment, as we speak, it's about down 5%. And some interesting news that came out this week, there was a JP Morgan strategist called David Lebotis. I think he warned investors, that was yesterday, Thursday, that about extreme volatility of crypto in the crypto market like Bitcoin, and his projections that this might go up to zero, which I don't know if it was a joke or he meant it, but he said that, if I remember very well, he said that correlations between crypto and like Bitcoin and traditional assets like stocks and bonds, that incredibly unstable. So and that makes it very difficult for they will zigzag during periods of stock and bond market stress. So that's what he mentioned, and I think that comes as JP Morgan was preparing. I think they reported last month they were preparing to offer a Bitcoin fund for their wealthy clients.
And also just to mention something, I know JP Morgan was, a lot of guys were questioning to what level are they going to have the Bitcoin fund, and they were very optimistic onto it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's because of the payments, various global payment merchants have I've really been saying that they would want to create ways here and there about accepting payments through crypto. But I know the main challenge that they've had is also with China, which came in the other day and told the guys, you know what, we cannot be able to have crypto mining. I don't know how China is really going to move into this. I think that's one challenge that guys are really going to be looking into. So I don't know, Eric, what would be your thought? Do you think that do you really think that China would have a total ban on crypto over time, considering China can do it? It's a communist nation, so they definitely can.
I think the question is, how many times have they issued such warnings?
But this time they've really yeah, pulled
how many, how many times have they issued such warnings? So many times. Still, I think crypto is here to stay. I think that's the thing. It's here to stay. And I think as China, I think they're planning to roll out their central bank digital currency, their digital currency rate. Could that be the main reason why they're trying to ban these other crypto assets?
Well, I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to touch on China. I'd rather hit on Uganda than to hit on China.
Interesting.
So I know that's one thing, Eric. Also on the headlines that really made news, I think that was on Wednesday, when Amazon announced that they were actually acquiring MGM Studios for about, was it $8.4 billion? I think that's going to be something as well that guys would really be looking into. How did it play out? Because at the same time, it's like Amazon has really, really revamped up its activity. Now the competition between Amazon, Netflix and Disney Plus, I think those are the main competitors for Amazon. Really, what's it going to be like over time? Do you really think that Amazon would finally take over? Also considering that MGM Studios really has a big control also in terms of licensing, because you know, MGM, for those of you guys, for guys who don't really understand, and in just in case you've forgotten, if you're watching those movies and then you see those, there's usually that movie that would start with a lion that would roar inside the circle. That's the company that owns that's the company that is known as MGM, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, which is a studio. It's a media company, and Amazon actually announced that they were acquiring MGM Studios. MGM has a lot of licensing for movies such as James Bond, some of the movies that have had the highest returns from box office. So I know this is going to be something that, $8.45 billion. I've just confirmed that it's $8.45 billion, so it's not 8.4. So I know that's one thing. There's a lot of activity that we are going to see. Now you see, if other people now want to take the rights, they want to buy the rights to probably air some of these movies. Other minor, smaller companies that would need them, probably say, looking at it from smaller companies, and by mentioning smaller, a disclaimer doesn't mean that they are also minor. If you look on other probably streaming houses like HBO, Hulu, if you're looking on probably NASPERS as well, then they would actually have to buy rights now directly from Amazon. So I believe that's going to be quite a little bit of a concern. But now my main worry is, what would be your take? How would it affect other streaming services like Netflix? And we saw Disney recently came up with Disney Plus, which I think has really been gaining traction over time as a subscription service. So what's really going to be like for these other companies? Do you think Netflix still has one way to go in one way or another? Because also locally, we're seeing Netflix has also increased their charges. Amazon is yet to increase their charges for Amazon Prime. But it's not only on Amazon Prime. Looking at it from just a global perspective, Eric, not only from a local perspective, but global, from a global environment, entertainment industry. How is that going to be?
Interesting. That was a good deal. I think it's the second largest acquisition in Amazon's history. I think behind the purchase of Whole Foods in 2017, I think that was around $14 billion at the time. From the statement that Amazon issued, what they said is that the real value behind this acquisition is the IP. the deep catalog that MGM has. So I think, as you mentioned, MGM has a large catalog of movies that have been producing for ages. And I think this is going to be a real bring real competition for other leading streaming sites like Netflix and the others. So given what Amazon has already achieved from a content perspective, I think these are huge one. This is going to be huge. And investors have reacted positively to this. I think Amazon's share price is up since they announced this news. So it's positive for Amazon investors. We hope you'll soon be able to invest in Amazon shares via Hisa app. But I think it's positive for Amazon, and it will intensify the competition for some of these other streaming sites like Netflix, Disney Plus, and others.
Talking about Hisa, guys, in case you're wondering, trading on Hisa is coming in very, very soon. We are almost at that bit. I know constantly on the show we keep telling you guys we will be trading via Hisa very soon. If you're yet to download Hisa app, you definitely want to check out Hisa app. Take your time, check out Hisa app on either Play Store, App Store. You'll be able to get it, interact, create your investor profile so that when trading comes, you don't really have to start afresh and start looking at what do I need to do. Trading, I know, Eric, probably you'd want to tell guys, I know within the next few months, we'll have gotten through with regulatory licensing and all this, and you'll be able to place orders.
Yes, so I think on Hisa app, it's a brief of where we are. I think we began development of the app around 2019. That's when we did the first code, right? Then beefed up the development around 2020 when the pandemic hit. So we've been doing a few integrations since then. But then, you know, with what we're trying to do, we need to get, we either need to be licensed or get a few partners who are licensed. So from a tech standpoint, I think we've done a big chunk of the work. So we are at the moment, I think, at a stage whereby we are trying to get a few regulatory approvals and a few headways. So I think once that's done, we'll be able to release it to the public to enable trading. So at the moment, you can download the app, create an investor profile. We've recently fixed a few bugs in the app, but expect trading in the next few months. So just simple things around regulatory approvals, then we go live.
All right, guys. So I know that's something that's going to be very interesting for a lot of people. If you've been wanting to trade on global markets, if you wanted to buy your Amazon shares, if you wanted to buy your if you wanted to buy your Netflix shares, or if you wanted to buy Disney, all of this, I know you'll be able to get it. That's on the entertainment sector. But also, if you don't want to buy other stocks, like probably Microsoft, if you don't want to buy stocks like Tesla, all these other companies that we've really been seeing and talking about on We're Curious, you'll be able to get them as well on the Hisa app. Here's a fun fact about MGM Studios. MGM Studios is one of the oldest studios in the world. MGM was actually founded on 17th April 1924. Mm-hmm. Quite some time. I don't know what happened in 1924 in Kenya's history, but there's something that happened in 1924. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so MGM was there in 1924, and now Amazon is actually owning MGM. That's going to be one of a very interesting way just to see on how it also affects other companies, because we know that over time Netflix has really had a majority of a say when it comes to streaming services. And now we're seeing Amazon is literally taking over onto it. So that's something I know we'll really be looking into over time. Eric, I know we've been here and we've said a lot. We're curious. I don't know if there's anything else that you'd want us to talk about as we conclude today's session.
I think we've pretty touched much of what's been happening across the globe, from crypto to such acquisitions, local markets. So, but I think we... From me, that's it.
All right, guys. Thank you all for attending We're Curious today. Thank you all. For those of you who are listening to us on Twitter Spaces, definitely catch us again next week on Friday. Same place, same time. And also, in case you're wondering where to get the recorded version of the previous We're Curious podcast, you could head up to the Hisa app once again and just check on the on the podcast section. There are a lot of podcasts, not only for We're Curious, but also Markets Monday, Bulls, Bears and Whiskey, and a lot more things that would really be fun for you guys to just have an interaction at. I know we'll be meeting up again on Monday as we talk about the markets, how the Nairobi Securities Exchange has performed this week and how markets shall have opened on Friday. So catch us then. But for today, I believe that's it for us.
Again, unless someone on Telegram or on Twitter Spaces has a question, then they can request we give them an opportunity to ask a question.